It's Susie from MERP, and I am here with Terrence from Suffocation.
Hello, everybody in MERP land.
Welcome to Portland.
How are you?
Your last release was 2017's Of the Dark Light.
Yes.
Is there anything in the works coming up?
Oh, I mean, slowly but surely. I mean, we've been doing a lot of touring, and, you know, of course, we're having the Frank retirement at this time. So we've been just really kind of just trying to cover the whole world as much as we can for this last record. We've done quite a bit of touring between Europe and the United States, but we haven't gotten down to Australia, New Zealand, all the rest of that stuff, Japan, India, so on and so forth. So for the next year, we're going to kind of try to concentrate on that. If there's any really cool tours going on, hopefully we could hop onto it, if not have like a very good lineup. And of course, slowly but surely, we're writing. So it'll be a little while before the next record, but you know, for right now, we'd like to really just try to tour as much as we can for this record and cover all the bases. So that way, when the next album comes, we have to start and do that all over again, which is kind of like pretty labor intensive, you know?
I remember the first Suffocation album I received, I think it was 2003. I was dating a death metal drummer.
Oh boy.
And he handed it to me.
Right on.
Was it a surprise when Frank said this was going to be his last tour?
Oh, no. Absolutely not. Not for me, anyway. I mean, you know, me and Frank are close friends. We always have been. And, it's, you know, as time has gone on, it's taken more of a toll on him. So, I mean, really, for like the last 6-7 years, he hasn't been doing any touring.
2013 was when he pretty much stopped.
Yeah, I mean, even before then, I mean, he really wasn't doing much writing or anything like that. It was more him doing more of the recording, being a part of the band. And I guess just regular life caught up to him at home and took away his attention from those types of things. And, you know, real life kicked in. So he just decided, he was like, nah, dude, I really just want to hang it up because I'd rather just, knowing that I can't do this forever, like with the way he sings and stuff like that, he would rather just go out before it ever happens. Like, you know, just go out on top because that's what's going to happen. Or before he can't do it and look like a fool, you know? And, I mean, I think deep down in my heart, I know that if we did make another record with Frank, it wouldn't be something that sucks. But if his voice is not up to par and he feels it's not up to par and all the rest of that, there's nothing I can do to control that kind of stuff.
Plus when you've made,
you know, yeah,
you've made,
you have to make it. So for us, I mean, you know, we're the guitar players, the string section, the drummers, you know, we all want to tour, and you know, we do this for a living. We spent a lot of time to do this, so I'm going to continue to keep playing, and Frank is cool with that, and we've been cool with it, and everything's copacetic. And you know, I just want to wish him the best, you know, because you know, he's our friend and he feels that this is his time to say adieu, so let's make it a good one for him.
Excellent. Yeah. And Ricky is who will continue.
Yeah,
on.
Ricky Myers, man. You guys know him.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, good. Do you remember the first thing that you heard that made you love metal?
Oh man, there is so much. I mean, I can't even begin. That's such a hard question. Like, it's making me think back to when I was like a child and what I was listening to at the time. And, I mean, there wasn't, I'd have to say, like, Black Sabbath and Jimi Hendrix, you know, things like Led Zeppelin early on with, you know, kind of heavy, raspy guitars, a little bit more aggressive, because for that time, that was what was aggressive. Those things kind of really turned me on, especially once I picked up a guitar at, like, 13, because at that point, it was like, I didn't want to listen to dance music, I didn't want to listen to, you know, the bubblegum pop stuff that's on the radio, because really, you didn't hear any guitars in it. So right from that point, once I heard a distorted guitar, I was like, fuck, I have to go and do this. Like, this is where I like it. It's been like that ever since, you know?
What was the first concert you ever saw?
Oh, way back in the day, I went and seen Saxon at L'Amour's in New York. And, what was I, like, maybe 16 years old, something, 15. And it was like an all-ages show. We went in there, and they just, like, blew the place to pieces. You know, and that was like a kind of cool experience. Although I was exposed to other like little concerts, but that Saxon concert of L'Amour's, I mean, you know, it was a couple thousand people and packed wall to wall, and people just smashing their heads into guitars and shit. So it was like the coolest thing ever.
I don't tell many people this, and many people don't see it, but I have the Saxon S tattooed on my body.
See, there you go. I mean, you see what I'm saying?
I love Saxon.
Saxons, they rock.
Yeah.
They fucking rock.
I saw Motorhead. That was my first live show.
Yeah, they rock too.
Ozzy and Randy Rhodes, and I, third row, and I fell in love.
Well, that would have been the next, that would have been the next influential thing, because Randy, like, really, like, once I heard, like, Dire Madman and Blizzard of Oz and stuff like that, it definitely changed my focal point as a guitar player, because I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And it just went down the line from there. There was so many different...
When you, being a guitar player and loving Randy Rhoads, for instance, do you have... I was really good friends with Ralph Sentol, and we used to talk a lot about...
Ralphie was a cool dude.
Loved him. Yeah. We used to talk a lot about, you know, Michael Schenker and things like that. Do you... There was a big difference between, like, Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin, and then when we get into, like, Eddie Van Halen and things like that. Really
That's a big jump, you know?
Big, huge jump.
It went more from, like, blues into, like, almost shreddy, headbangy type of things, as opposed to everything else, you know?
Are you a guitar virtuoso fan? Like,
of course. I mean, there's quite a few, you know, virtuoso guitar players, some flamenco players, some just, you know, metalhead shredders, you know, the Michelangelo Battios of the world and stuff. So, you know, of course I listen to that every now and then, although I can't base everything that I do around what they're doing. They're like some pretty incredible players out there.
For sure. You guys don't do a lot of videos.
No, and I mean, you know, it's hard for us to think up the concept of what we would want to do in a video. I mean, we work so much more on, like, recording aspects and writing riffs and going over older material to bring it out on the road that, like, we find that we just never have the time to, like, do a video. And even for Of the Dark Light, I mean, yeah, we did, like, you know, the Lear video thing. But we haven't done a full theatrical video yet. And I mean, even in that span of time, as I was saying, touring the world, that's what I mean. We have things that we should be doing. So being on the road is one thing, but actually going and doing the videos and doing all the extra press and doing all that, it's kind of hard to do when you're on the road a lot.
Getting new fans, do you think it's most important to tour, do videos, or new releases?
Well, I think it's a combination of all of them. I mean, if you have a new release, you got to tour for it, you know. Go out there and show the world your stuff and let them physically see you, as well as doing videos and stuff like that, because that media market is there. So I think it's a combination of all of them. You got to be on the social media, you got to be out there making videos, you got to be out there touring, you got to be producing albums. And it may not be something that you have to do every single year. It's best to spend your time on your craft and put out something that you really like. Yeah, you need to have all those facets in order to try to, like, really promote your band and try to get it seen.
Social media is kind of a necessary evil. Is it something, fan interaction, is it something that you enjoy doing, or is it, like, part of the job?
As far as social media, I'm not, like, the kind of guy that wants to take a picture of my toast and put it up there, you know. You know, the political part, I very rarely touch on it out there and that stuff. Basically, I use it just for talking to people who are trying to, you know, talk to the band, see about doing merch, maybe doing shows, things like that. So I'm usually dwelling in the messenger parts of all the social media more, just as talking to try to, you know, enhance the band, enhance my life and stuff like that. As I am not necessarily a big fan of social media, you know, when my band started playing, we didn't have the social media that we have today. So, you know, everything was groundwork by foot. You know, you had to go and flyer the show at the next venue, and you had to go to the shows and hand out little cards, and you had to make mailing lists and shit like that. Now you just hop on there and do a mass fucking text bank, and everybody, if people want to pay attention to it, they do, you know. But it was a lot different when you found that flyer on your car and you had to look at it to throw it away, you know, not just scroll down.
You've been considered one of the, you know, grandfathers, that's a bad word, but one of the founders.
No, it's okay, you can call me grandpa. I'm getting up there, you know.
Probably older than you.
Yeah, I don't know, but you look younger than I do.
Thank you.
That's what matters.
There's a lot of bands that then would follow in your footsteps and be influenced by you. When you hear a riff that's something that you guys have done, does it feel good, like, or is it...
I mean, I think it does feel good when you see, like, you know, people out there that listen to your music and really like it. Or, like, when you see a band that's influenced by it, you know. I mean, for me, that, you know, imitation is the highest form of flattery. You know how that one goes. I think it's really great that people, like, actually take the time to even tell you, you know, oh, dude, this is the coolest thing, listen to this. And it's like, or you hear it on the radio or something, you know, you're like, wow, that's pretty impressive. At least I did a little something, you know.
Some time ago, Decibel Magazine said Effigy of the Forgotten was a benchmark album. Do you look at like charts and critics and stuff like that? Does that matter to you anymore?
No. Absolutely not. You know, because people always want to try to, I don't know, make something out of nothing to make people, like, pay attention to it. You know, bad publicity is good publicity type thing. And at this point, you know, I think that most metalheads and stuff like that that are out there playing in bands are really trying to do the same thing. So they're our warriors. Anyway, they're our warriors from you know, being a part of the scene, you know? So I don't want to put them down for trying to do something that they love to do, and if they have the longevity to stick to it and make a craft or something, more power to them, you know?
So Suffocation has a sound, and fans expect certainly not a formula. I don't mean that at all. I mean just a certain sound.
Yes.
Do you ever wish that you could branch out and do something more experimental that the fans wouldn't probably accept?
Yeah, I mean, I would do something like that, but I wouldn't do it in this band, you know what I mean? Like, I would do it in a totally different band, and people would know what to expect if it was something else, you know? So I wouldn't leave it out to chance.
Some bands do that and it just doesn't work. When AC/DC came on, I mean, they're a formula band, and to some degree, like Slayer and things like that.
Yes, but, yes, yes.
You know, there has to be some, I guess, some formula, you know, or some, formula is a bad word, some recipe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the better way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
With technology the way it is now, do you feel a trend or anything that you think might happen going forward?
Well, with technology popping up more and more and more, I mean, things do get, like, it's so much more simpler for people to go out and put out a project, and wow, that door is heavy duty. It's very good. You know, it's more easy for bands to actually produce stuff and get it out quickly, because now, like, the home recording generation is here, and it's simple for people to do it at home in the computers and stuff. I think that kind of does take away a little bit of the element of having a band that has to sit there and play together to go and record, because the whole style of recording back in the day, it was like your stuff really ended up on the chopping room floor, as opposed to going undo, and having a million takes to choose from and you instantly put it in there. That's not the way it was. So I think, you know, I guess older bands, especially that have been going to reel-to-reel studios up until this point, kind of miss out a lot, because it's so much simpler for them to just cut and paste and slice and edit at home as it is to actually play the songs, go into a place, have to rehearse it and make it perfect, and, you know, play it and make it perfect.
I think that's interesting. Like, older bands, well, I guess Wolfheart isn't that old. There's a band out of Sweden called Wolfheart, and their music, I'm super in love with it. I mean,
right,
it, like, touches me. And I just interviewed him, and he said they actually sit down as a band and record together.
Yeah, you know, which is great.
And you feel that when you have a band that just takes a little loop and loops it and loops it and
loops it. Right,
it
makes
feels
it more organic, and it makes the band sound like the band, not like a cookie-cutter, cut-and-paste thing.
For pleasure, do you listen to metal, or do you listen to other genres?
I listen to metal, flamenco, I listen to some rock, I listen to some, you know, old traditional. Sometimes I even listen to some old funky disco, you know, Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know what I mean? You know, for me, I have a pretty wide musical taste, but for the most part, I do listen to metal, you know.
Do you give lessons?
Sometimes. Maybe to my friends more than anybody else at this point, you know.
So when you're on the road, though, you don't make arrangements?
Nah, not at all, not at all.
When you were a kid, most kids want to be like a fireman. What did you want to do before this?
I wanted to be an astronaut when I was a child, just like everybody wanted to be an astronaut, a firefighter, or a police officer.
I was going to be a princess. It didn't work
out. Right. You see what I'm saying? So I'm not. I mean, I'm in outer space just because I smoke too much. But you know, I never really made it past the Earth's stratosphere.
Is there a particular album in your catalog that you would never want to play from start to finish live?
Of our records? Oh, well, I mean, all of them. No. I mean, we have so many records at this point that it's, like, really hard for us to pick and choose the songs that we like to play and fit it into an hour set, you know? You know, like, 11, 12 releases over the course, including demos and EPs, it's quite a bit. So you look at that discography and how many songs that there are, it's like, yeah, I'm not just going to pick those 9 songs and play them. We have to play this one and this one and go to this album, play this one and go to that album, and really pick the ones that we love. So, I mean, maybe one day we'll do it, but I wouldn't count on it anytime soon.
Yeah, it's hard when you have new songs and you want to put them out there because
they're
new and they feel good. But
exactly.
Fans want to hear the old stuff. It must be hard to pick a set list.
Well, yeah, especially since the lineup changes have happened to my band so many different times. To go back and just take all that old material and sit the band down and to go over that, it takes enough time and effort when we should be spending more time writing a new record. So it's a real hard catch 22 in there, like balancing act, you know.
If you had a child, I don't know if you do or not, but
no,
if they wanted to follow in your footsteps, would you give them a thumbs up or say don't do it?
I would say, yeah, do it. You know, because I'm doing something that I love to do, and I don't consider it a job the way that you would say a 9-to-5 job is. But it's nice to be able to know that I don't have to have somebody lingering over my shoulders. It's, you know, our craft. It's our thing that we do. It's our art. And I think that should always be instilled in anybody. Maybe, let's say they wanted to play guitar. Maybe in 2 weeks they'd find out the guitar isn't right and want to play piano. And I would encourage them to do that too. Or play the drums. Or to play soccer. Or whatever they really want to do. And that's what's most important. You know?
What's your proudest moment in the band?
That's hard to say. There was a lot of really cool, you know, moments for me. When we got the Long Island Music Hall of Fame Award, was probably one of the biggest ones. When we played Rockin' Open Air Festival in 2005, was a humongous event for us.
How many people?
Oh, it was like 50, 60,000. It was a lot, you know. And it was just like for us being a band, yeah, we played in front of a couple hundred, maybe a couple thousand, but not like something like 50, 60,000. Going to Japan for the first time was like a big accomplishment for the band. So there's quite a few moments, you know. They all kind of weigh the same on me. Just going through them, but those would be some of the doozies.
Have you played South Africa?
No. I was planning on trying to do it. It's just for us to go from New York all the way to South Africa to play Witch Fest is like it's a never-ending haul for us. It's like, you know, 2 days straight of like flying, broken up, and we'd like to break it up doing like some touring in Europe, fly from Europe and do it, and then come back and play shows and break it all up. So it's going to take a minute before we get there, but we're trying.
I lived there for 3 years. I've been home for two. I fell in love with the musician and moved there, and it's a long flight.
Yeah,
but no band. I mean, very few bands come there. I did get to see Iron Maiden. That was right. The only, you know, band I got to see, but very few bands go there.
Anymore. Well, I wonder why.
I don't know.
Well, Diane Ward's killing the game there, so.
Seether, they're from there.
Right, there you go.
So most of us want to leave a mark in the world for future generations. Do you feel like you've done that with Suffocation?
I would hope so. For me, just knowing that the records are out is like kind of an accomplishment that I'm proud of. So if metalheads from years from now, like from past when I'm gone, are still listening to it, I think in retrospect, I would, you know, if I were still alive, I would be really happy about it.
Is there a question you've always wanted somebody to ask you but they never have?
No. I've gotten quite a few doozies. So I'm pretty road rugged, you know.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
We love you guys. Thank you for your guys' support. Keep listening to death metal. Support your local scene. And we'll see you on the road soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.